Although he was the victor, Lieutenant General Masaharu Homma did not feel victorious, nor did he take pleasure in any of the usual glories or spoils. He was enormously relieved that Bataan had finally succumbed, but for the 14th Army, the war was far from over. Homma still had not won the true prize his superiors in Tokyo demanded of him, the prize which they insisted was long overdue. There was little point in occupying the Philippines if the Japanese Navy or Merchant Marine could not freely use the docks and wharves of Manila Bay, the finest natural harbor in Asia. Yet one could not control Manila Bay without controlling Corregidor. Fixed with cannons that could fire 20 miles, honeycombed with deep tunnels and lateral shafts, Corregidor was stuck like a steel bit in the mouth of Manila Bay. The island was shaped like a tadpole, its squirmy tail pointing off toward Manila, its bulbous head aimed at Bataan. The Rock, it was called, the impregnable fortress, the Asian Gibraltar. There was only one way for Homma to take Corregidor, and that was for him to move his forces into southern Bataan, array his artillery pieces high along the southern flanks of Mount Mariveles, and rain unmerciful fire down upon the island, softening it up until an amphibious assault could be reasonably undertaken. Confronting this complex interlock of land and water, Homma realized that Bataan was but the first key. It is an axiom of Euclidean geometry that two points cannot occupy the same space, and therein lay Homa's problem. Before he could move his forces into southern Bataan, the surrendered Americans and Filipinos would have to be moved out. In their crippled thousands, they were underfoot, directly in the line of fire, like so much human debris. They were concentrated along the southeastern rim of the peninsula, precisely the area that afforded Homma the best vantage point for attacking Corregidor. Constantly chastised by Tokyo for moving too slowly, the ordinarily cautious Homma was under enormous pressure to expedite his artillery bombardment of the island. Thus, Wainwright's refusal to surrender Corregidor meant that the Bataan prisoners would have to be hastily cleared away, swept off the stage, in effect, so the next act could begin. General Homma had foreseen this enormous evacuation problem a month earlier, and had commissioned some of his ablest officers to address it. The officers had presented their ideas to Homma on March 28th. On paper, their plan appeared decent and humane. The prisoners were to be incarcerated at a place called Camp O'Donnell, a former training installation for the Philippine Army that lay approximately 75 miles north of Bataan's tip. The prisoners of war would be brought up the east road of Bataan. Those soldiers who were physically able would be expected to march, but the distances would be reasonable, on average no more than 10 miles a day. Food and shelter would be provided. Hundreds of vehicles would be furnished to transport the sick. 2 field hospitals would be set up, each one capable of treating as many as 1,000 patients. The plan had 2 fatal flaws, however, flaws which would not become fully apparent until several days after the surrender. The first was that Homma's officers grossly underestimated the number of prisoners who would offer themselves up. Based on wildly inaccurate intelligence reports of enemy troop strengths made earlier in the siege, Homma's planners projected that only about 25,000 Filipino and American troops would surrender. The actual number, counting civilians, was closer to 100,000. The second major mistake made by Homma's planners was that they grossly overrated the health and strength of the prisoners. By their reckoning, well over 70% of the Luzon force could easily make the trip to Camp O'Donnell on foot. They had no sense of the scale of the starvation and disease that racked the Phil-American troops. Overall, Homma seemed pleased with the plan. Although he was preoccupied with strategies for the coming offensive against Corregidor, it was important to him that the prisoners be handled fairly. Homma was a compassionate general, with views that might be described as liberal and internationalist. Considered by many the most brilliant military theoretician of his generation, Homma was a moody, sensitive, eccentric man of striking good looks. The son of middle-class landowners who had farmed rice for centuries, and standing nearly 6'2", he was regarded as a virtual giant for a Japanese man of his era. Homa's colleagues viewed him as fiercely intelligent, highly principled, and vaguely effeminate. A prominent novelist named Hidemi Kon, who knew Homa well, wrote that the imposing and large-statured general seemed like a man made for command. Yet he was a kind of living contradiction, with the personality of an idiosyncratic aesthete, unhappily trapped inside the confines of Bushido discipline. Homa was known for painting and composing verse during the heat of battle, a habit that won him the nickname the Poet General.